Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I've really been looking forward to this one because today, well, we're not just reading a book. It feels more like we're peering into the personal journal of, well, one of history's most powerful men.
Oh, absolutely. And it's an extraordinary journal. Our deep dive today is into Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Mm. And like you said, this isn't some, you know, dry academic text. It's a really profound personal guide, reflections he wrote purely for himself.
Exactly. And, you know, you might be listening and thinking, okay, why should I care about the private thoughts of some ancient Roman emperor? But here's where it gets really interesting. His struggles, things like stress, finding inner peace, trying to live with purpose, in a world that, let's face it, probably felt just as chaotic as ours sometimes does, it's all incredibly relevant. This deep dive, I think, is genuinely a shortcut to building resilience and maybe a bit more inner strength, something we could all probably use. Couldn't agree more. So let's get a sense of the man behind these words first. Marcus Aurelius lived from 121 to 180 AD. He was the last of the emperors history calls the five good emperors of Rome. And what's fascinating, truly, is the contrast. Here's this guy who was, by nature, pretty contemplative, sort of scholarly, and yet he's suddenly thrust into, well, arguably the most powerful job in the known world at the time.
Right, and his reign, it wasn't exactly peaceful, was it? He wasn't just, you know, sitting around on the throne. He was constantly out there leading huge military campaigns on the frontiers. He was grappling with massive crises like the Antonine Plague, navigating all the political dangers, the intrigues, and personally,
yeah,
immense suffering. He outlived his wife and so many of his children, I think, what, 8 out of 13?
Yeah, the personal loss was staggering. Can you even imagine the kind of mental fortitude needed?
It's hard to grasp.
And that intense experience, that lived experience, is exactly what makes his perspective in Meditations so unique, so authentic. His authority, it doesn't come from theory. It comes from applying philosophy under the absolute highest pressure imaginable. And remember, this wasn't a book meant for us. It was his private journal, written in Greek, often while he was literally on campaign, probably in a tent somewhere, during the last 10 years of his life.
Wow.
That raw, unfiltered quality makes it feel less like philosophy and more like a practical, like a field manual for living well when things are tough.
So what's the core message then? She had to boil it down.
Yeah.
What was Marcus trying to remind himself of night after night?
Well, the central idea, really the heart of the whole thing, is that a good life, you know, virtuous, meaningful, calm, it's achieved by mastering your own mind and living according to reason and nature. It's purely a guide for self-improvement, his way of coaching himself. He wasn't trying to convince anyone else. It's literally him talking to himself about how to be a decent human being under immense pressure.
And that gets right to the big question he keeps wrestling with, doesn't it? Which is, you know, how do we live a good life, a life of purpose and justice and peace when we're constantly facing external pressures, difficult people, suffering, and, well, the fact that we're all going to die?
That's the challenge, isn't it? Then and now. And Aurelius's stoic answer is, it's remarkably simple, but also incredibly hard. Focus only on what's truly in your control, your thoughts, your judgments, your actions. That's it. He argues that if you train your perception to see things objectively without adding drama, if you act virtuously, you know, justly, courageously, and if you accept what you simply cannot change, then you build this inner citadel, an unbreachable fortress of peace inside yourself.
I love that phrase, inner citadel. So powerful.
Right. No matter what's going on outside, that inner place stays calm.
And the book itself, it's not like a story with a beginning, middle, and end, is it? It's more cyclical.
Exactly. The structure isn't linear at all. It's more like a spiral of recurring themes. It's just a series of these self-reminders, aphorisms, reflections, grouped into 12 sections or books. It really does feel like you're looking over his shoulder while he gives himself a pep talk, reminding himself of the core principles, coming back to them again and again.
Yeah.
Things like managing anger, anxiety, grief, thinking about death, memento mori, remember you must die, not in a morbid way, but to like appreciate the present.
Right, to live fully now.
Yeah, and his duty to the common good, and always, always that key difference between what happens outside and our judgment about it inside.
Okay, let's dive into a few of these books, because that's where you really see the practice. Book one is quite surprising, isn't it? It starts not with philosophy, but with gratitude.
Yes. It immediately sets this tone of humility, of connection. He starts by thanking specific people, like he thanks his grandfather for good character, his mother for piety, tutors for work ethic, Junius Rusticus for introducing him to the works of Epictetus, another key Stoic.
Ah, Epictetus, right.
And especially his adoptive father, Emperor Antoninus Pius. He sees him as this perfect role model of a just, patient, humble leader.
It's such a powerful way to start. That idea that wisdom isn't just internal, it's learned, it's inherited from others, from community.
Mm.
Really grounding. Mm. But then book two, the tone shifts quite dramatically, doesn't it? More somber, more urgent. Written on campaign, you said.
Exactly. Book two kicks off with this powerful morning meditation. He's literally prepping himself for the day, anticipating that he'll meet annoying people, ungrateful people, difficult people.
We've all been there.
Right. But he reminds himself, their actions, outside my control, my reaction, inside my control. This book also looks death right in the eye, the fleeting nature of life, of fame, it means nothing in the long run. And he introduces that Stoic idea. We're made of body, breath, and the crucial part, the ruling faculty, the mind.
The mind, yeah.
And his whole focus becomes cultivating and protecting that.
That focus on the ruling faculty, the mind, that feels like it leads straight into book four, where he really hammers home how perception shapes reality. What's the key insight there?
Book four is all about our life is what our thoughts make it. Suffering, he basically says, doesn't come from events. It comes from our judgments about them. He gives that amazing example. A fancy gourmet dish is really just, you know, the dead body of a fish or a bird.
Oh, yeah, talk about objective.
Right, stripping away the emotional baggage. And he also introduces the view from above meditation. You visualize Earth from space, see how small your problems are in the grand scheme. It can be incredibly freeing.
That view from above is still such a useful exercise. Okay, so you understand perception, and then book five feels like, well, like a powerful kick in the pants towards action. He's literally telling himself off for wanting to stay in bed.
Oh, absolutely. Book five is a direct call to get up and do your job. He reminds himself his nature is to work for the common good. That real fulfillment doesn't come from comfort. It comes from doing your duties virtuously. And this is where we get that incredible phrase, the impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way.
That just reframes everything, doesn't it?
Totally. It turns every obstacle from a barrier into the actual material you use to practice virtue, resilience, patience, creativity, whatever's needed.
That's a real game changer for daily frustrations. Okay, skipping ahead a bit, book eight introduces another huge concept, amor fati, the love of fate. What does that really mean for us?
Amor fati.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's deeper than just acceptance. It's about actively embracing whatever happens, good or bad, seeing it all as necessary, as part of the whole pattern of the universe, the logos, as the Stoics called it, that divine, rational principle behind everything.
So instead of why me,
it's
more like,
okay, this is what's happening. What can I learn? How can this make me better? And he connects this big cosmic acceptance directly to simple human kindness, reminding himself we are made for cooperation, like limbs of a body. Our purpose is to work together, even with difficult people.
That link between cosmic acceptance and daily kindness is profound. And then fast forwarding to the end, book 12, he comes back to mortality.
Yeah.
But maybe with a different feel, like peace.
Yes, exactly. Book 12 feels like a final powerful meditation on living with death in view. He advises living each day as if it really could be the last. No panic, no pretending. Just live fully and virtuously. He dismisses the fear of death. It's just a natural process, part of the cycle. And it ends with that beautiful image. Leave life gracefully like a ripe olive falling from the tree. Content, complete.
Wow. What an incredible journey inside his mind. Okay, let's try and pull out some of the core themes that really tie meditations together, the big takeaways for us today.
Okay, well, the first, maybe the most fundamental, is the dichotomy of control. We touched on it, basically. Mm. Focus only on what's truly yours, your thoughts, your choices, your actions. Let go of everything else. External events, other people's opinions or behavior, you can't control them, so don't waste energy trying.
Right. Think about road rage or getting upset about the weather. It's pointless anxiety over things outside our control if we just focus on our response.
Exactly. It's incredibly empowering when you really internalize it.
Okay, theme two, the power of perception and judgment.
Yeah. Events themselves are neutral. They just are. It's our interpretation, our judgment about them that makes them seem good or bad.
Like losing your job.
Mm.
The event itself is neutral. Our judgment makes it a disaster. But could we reframe it? See it as an opportunity, maybe? A chance for something new?
Precisely. We choose the label. We choose the story we tell ourselves about it.
Okay, third.
Third, amor fati, the love of fate, which we discussed. Not just putting up with things, but actively welcoming everything as part of the grand design. it shifts the question from why is this happening to me to what can I do with this? How can this serve my growth? It's a radical acceptance.
Yeah, it changes your whole relationship with adversity. And finally.
Finally, virtue as the sole good. True happiness, real worth, doesn't come from external stuff, money, status, praise. It comes from inside, from cultivating wisdom, justice, courage, self-control. Those are the real treasures.
Because those are things nobody can take away from you.
Yeah.
Unlike a job or possessions.
Exactly. You build an inner wealth, an inner character that's unshakable.
In Meditations, it's just packed with these really direct, punchy lines that stick with you.
Oh, absolutely. So many memorable quotes.
My personal favorite has to be, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength."
I mean, that's the core of self-empowerment right there, isn't it? Puts the power back in your hands, focusing the battle inward. Totally. And this one is just so direct about where happiness comes from. The happiness of your life depends upon the quality of your thoughts. It's a direct challenge to looking outside yourself for fulfillment. Puts the responsibility squarely on us, on our inner world.
Yeah. And here's one that just cuts through all the talk. Waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Be one.
Ha! Yes.
It's such a necessary jolt, you know. Philosophy isn't just thinking, it's doing. It's about how you actually live moment to moment.
Love that one. And for dealing with difficulties, this is gold. The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. It completely reframes obstacles. They aren't stopping you. They're the path. They're the material you use to practice virtue.
Incredible. So let's bring this home. How do these ancient ideas really apply to our, you know, crazy modern lives, professionally, personally?
Well, professionally, think about stress. Instead of fixating on outcomes you can't control or a difficult boss's mood, focus on your effort, your performance, your attitude, the things you can control. It can massively reduce anxiety and burnout.
Yeah, I can see that. Or dealing with, say, difficult colleagues. Instead of getting angry, maybe see as a chance to practice patience. Empathy. Remember Marcus saying we're made for one another.
Right.
It changes the interaction.
And personally, how can we use this day to day?
For emotional resilience, definitely.
Mm.
When you face setbacks, a breakup, health issues, whatever, use that framework.
Mm-hmm.
See the event objectively. Focus on your response. Can I be courageous here? Patient. Then endure without letting it break you.
Mm-hmm.
And those practical exercises are great. The morning meditation. Prep yourself mentally for the day's challenges. Commit to responding well.
And that negative visualization you mentioned.
Yeah, it sounds morbid, but periodically imagining losing things you value, your job, health,
yeah,
even loved ones, it's not to be gloomy.
Yeah.
It's to increase appreciation for what you have now and to mentally prepare. It lessens the shock if bad things do happen, makes you more resilient. For me, this whole deep dive really hammered home that idea that real freedom, real peace, isn't about changing the world outside. It's about changing the world inside, building that inner citadel, thought by thought. That's where the real work and the real reward lies.
I completely agree. And my final thought is just that philosophy, the way Marcus lived it, isn't just something you read about. It's a practice. It's something you do every day. It's about shifting from being reactive to proactive, seeing challenges not as threats, but as opportunities to strengthen your character. It's an ongoing discipline. But gosh, it offers so much freedom.
Absolutely. It's just got this profound humanism. It's an honest account of a powerful person struggling to be good. And that makes it such a timeless, valuable guide for anyone anywhere trying to navigate this messy, flawed world and be a decent human being. It's really quite special. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.